Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. Our guest today is Michael McCarthy, who is a sports media reporter for Sporting News, and he also teaches at Rutgers. ESPN had a big shakeup in its executive ranks today, and so it was a good time for us to talk about the general state of ESPN. Mike, how are you doing today?
Real good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So the big news this morning was Connor Shell was named new executive vice president of content at ESPN, and he's in charge of all of the content on TV, digital, and print. Now, where this differs from his old role, in my understanding, is previously he was basically in charge of ESPN's original studio content, and now he's in charge of all the content on all their TV and web vehicles, and so people that weren't reporting to him before are reporting to him now. Included in that is Norby Williamson and Rob King, and then there are a few people who are out of the company, including John Cosner, who was previously in charge of digital, and Marie Donahue, who was in charge of like Grantland and 538 and The Undefeated. What's your biggest takeaway from everything that happened today?
My takeaway is this: if content is king, Connor Shell is the new king of content at ESPN. This is a huge, huge promotion for him. As you said, some of the people who didn't used to report to him are now reporting into him. He's effectively what John Skipper was under Bodenheimer, which is the number two. And he set himself as an heir apparent to Skipper.
Yeah, I think that he's been in the talks for a while. I'm not sure exactly how much this is going to change what his focus was, because anytime you heard the really, like, I'm not going to say the games manage themselves, but I think ESPN is pretty tried and true format with how they broadcast NBA and NFL and MLB and NCAA games, and I don't think that that's going to change too much. His studio shows, he's been working on these for a while. For any time you heard that a show was coming together or like various talents were rising or falling in that kingdom, it was based on what Connor was doing. What's really going to be interesting to see is how much this affects the web. But my understanding is they really want to start getting more engagement from not just content that they create directly for the web, like pieces that have always lived on ESPN.com. They want more video engagement on social media and otherwise for their studio programming that they air on television.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. They do want more engagement, and I think you're absolutely right that Shell's fingerprints are already being seen all over ESPN. I mean, their big new show of the year is going to be Mike Greenberg's solo show, which debuts January 1st, 2018. Now, this is a huge risk. I mean, you may not like Mike or Mike. You might consider them ill-quoted and dull, but it was a very successful show that made a lot of money and got a lot of ratings for 18 years. And that's Connor Shell's baby, that show. I also think you've seen his fingerprints on The Jump, the fact that that's moved to a year-round show. I know Shell loves the NBA. He's a big basketball guy, and I think the fact that The Jump is becoming more prominent is also a tribute to Shell. But again, you know what I mean? The thing about Shell is he's a content guy. You know, if you want to talk about him as a possible successor, I mean, the real question will be for ESPN down the road: do they want a business person in that role? You know, somebody who's a politician and can handle the Disney side of it, or do they want a content person? And Shell is a content person, and he might be just great at doing content.
You mentioned that Greeny's show is a huge risk. I think that they're fighting a gigantic uphill battle for that. As you said, they're not only breaking up Mike and Mike, which has delivered not just ratings, but just regular, consistent, predictable flow of money for the last 18 years. There are lots of things that have come and gone in ESPN that time. You could set your watch to that show making like $30 to $50 million a year in profit, and they're breaking that up. They're paying Greenberg more than they're paying maybe any other on-air person at the company, with the possible exception of John Gruden. And they're developing a studio in New York, which isn't cheap. And my understanding is that they're going to be hiring 3 permanent co-panelists for that position. So it's going to be Greeny and friends, but those friends are going to be people who are going to be on there day in and day out. And if they're going to get anybody dynamic who has other things going on in their career that might be better than waking up at 4:30 in the morning, they're going to have to pay those people a lot of money too.
Exactly. I mean, I think our reporting has been very similar. I mean, I heard months ago that who they really wanted for that role was Katie Nolan. They wanted to put Katie Nolan of FS1 with Greeny and pair them together in the morning. But that didn't work out. She's under contract until well into next year, so they couldn't get Nolan. Some of the names I'm hearing about recently, I'm hearing about that in terms of the 3 full-timers around Greeny, they want an NFL person. And I'm hearing that Booger McFarland is in the running for that. They want an NBA expert. I'm hearing Jalen Rose is on that. And then I keep hearing that there's going to be a female co-anchor, co-host. And Cassidy Hubbard has a very good relationship with Greeny. She worked a lot on Mike and Mike with him and Golic. And I'm hearing that she's in the mix. But again, I'm hearing they're looking inside and outside. I don't know about you, but I mean, the fact that they're looking inside and outside tells me that this is a big, important show for ESPN, and they are willing to spend money on it.
The home run hire, if they could somehow get her, and I don't think that it's a reasonable possibility, but who knows the way things work, is Carissa Thompson, because she is very dynamic. She could go on that show and immediately have a magnetic presence on it. I just don't know if you're in her position. You just bought a house on the beach in Malibu and you've got Fox NFL coverage. You might be in line to replace Kurt Menefee one day on their #1 rated national pregame show. You've got Access Hollywood. What could compel you to move across the country and have to get up at 4 in the morning every day and have a daily sports talk program in a time slot that is going to be challenging to get people away from politics?
You're right. ESPN loves Carissa Thompson. We reported months ago that she was one of the names they reached out to succeed Chris Berman on Sunday NFL Countdown. Now, I argue with the ESPN people about this at their upfront. You know, they have denied that up, down, and sideways. But, you know, I have excellent sources on this who told me there absolutely was a back channel communication between Carissa and her people and ESPN and her people about that job. As far as what would bring her back to ESPN, money. Money is what brings everybody back in TV. It's what got, what's her name over to NBC from Fox, Megyn Kelly. It's what gets anybody to move. But you're right. She's got such a sweet gig out there. She loves L.A. She's got the entertainment thing. I mean, I guess the one thing you could say to her is that, you know, this is her ability to put her stamp on a national morning show. I mean, if this show takes off and ESPN is going to do its damnedest to make sure it does, you know, whoever does the show could be in line for Good Morning America, Today Show, CBS This Morning. They could basically write their own ticket.
Don't you think she could get there anyway?
She could, she has the talent, but you know, right now she's doing a job which, quite frankly, a lot of people are doing. She's hosting a number two NFL show on her own network, and she's doing entertainment reporting. Well, you know, there's a lot of people who do that stuff right now, but there's not a lot of people who can headline their own morning show.
Well, yeah, I just, they just let go 100 people. I know they're bringing in new talents. It's just that for the amount of money that they would have to give her to do that show, I'm not saying it would be bad optics because she would make that show profoundly better, but it's really tough tightrope to walk if you're ESPN and you're in a bidding war there.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, the other thing to remember is, you know, ESPN's got a lot of talent inside. You know, if they're looking for, you know, SportsCenter type anchors to balance Greeny, you know, somebody to do the news and the highlights while he handles the conversations and more of the interviews and the chit chat, you know, they've got a ton of people to choose from. I mean, one of the great things about ESPN is it's such a pipeline for talent. You know, all the young talent wants to work there, which is why they feel, unfortunately, so free to get rid of older talent, because they always know they got some, you know, three people to replace them.
One person in-house that I could see being good in that role is Carrie Champion. They're getting rid of the Coast to Coast Sports Center with Carrie and David Lloyd. And so they have to find something to do with her. She's pretty talented. I think she could be a good counterbalance for Greeny on that show. This is really not meant as disrespect to Greenberg, but what I think they should have done is just make Mike and Mike their anchor morning show on ESPN1, and they should have done that 5 years ago.
You know, that was the original plan. Do you remember at the upfront a couple of years ago, they made a lot of big noises about moving Mike and Mike to New York? Well, guess what? From what I heard, they made this announcement before both of them had agreed to a contract. So that thing blew up in their face. But, you know, in terms of Mike and Mike, I mean, things run their course. 18 years is an eternity on TV. And, you know, when I talked to Greenberg about it, he said, you know, people had mentioned stuff to him over the years, but this show was the only thing that ever made him want to look beyond Mike and Mike. And, you know, I think if you look at Golic, too, Golic's, you know, an NFL player. When I talked to him about it, he was fine with it. He was like, okay, let's move on. I'm ready for my new partner. You know, this is business. You know, we think of these you know, people as such so tight and such close friends, but business is business. You know, these people are in a business relationship, and they'll move on and they'll be fine.
I think Golic is all right with the relationship dissolving, but I think that the way it went down, it's pretty clear reading tea leaves that that rubbed him the wrong way. There was Deitch's report that Golic might have found out that that show was in the works when that story got published. Like, I don't know if someone doesn't give him a heads up, hey, this story's coming out. I want to, like, I know it's not a pleasant conversation to be having, but I don't want you to be blindsided by it. That would take somebody in the company maybe 5 minutes to do, so he doesn't just see his professional life really shifting before he doesn't learn it at the same time as everybody else. And you saw with the tweets from his son that they don't think that this Greeny show is a good idea. So I know when Golic and Greenberg talked to you, they were diplomatic about it, but I don't think that this dissolving was as smooth or sat as well with Golic as he might say on the record.
Yeah, I agree with you that it hasn't been handled smoothly. I mean, you could have cut the tension with a knife during that little goodbye thing they did that went viral. I mean, it was obviously they hadn't really prepared it. They hadn't really rehearsed it. And they came off pretty cold towards each other, you know, to the extent where they didn't even wish each other luck. Now, being the pros that they are, they've rebounded. I've been watching this show the last couple of weeks, you know, to look for cracks and strains. And they've been doing pretty good. But, you know, to Richard Deitch's reporting, you know, nothing against Rich and his story. But I heard that Golic knew about it months before that story hit. You know what I mean? That this has been talked about for a long time. And that obviously what, you know, frosted him was how it ended up, which is seemingly, you know, Greeny getting the brass ring, the new show, the $6 million deal, and him being shifted over to ESPNU.
Well, I don't even think it's going to be there. I don't think they're going to broadcast Golic and Wingo at all. You think it'll be on ESPNU?
That's what I heard, or that's what I read somewhere, that there is going to be a simulcast. You know, obviously it's going to be on the radio, but it is going to be on another channel. But, I mean, look, E1 and E2 were spoken for. Greeny's going to E1, and the old SportsCenter AM, you know, now with Sage Steele added, is going to E2 with Kevin Negande and Jay Harris. So, I mean, Golic has to go somewhere, the show. Or, like you say, you know, maybe it just ends up on radio.
Yeah, we'll see about that. I want to talk about SC6 because I don't think that there's any way that they can show that it's been a success, either with viewership or with the content. And so it's like if you're wondering if you should have confidence in this Greenberg program, the big show this year was SC6, and we found that that show is down about around the same year over year as PTI is, but where it's especially pronounced is on big game days when the 6 p.m. Sports Center used to really be the national pregame. We found that the ratings are down massively for tentpole events. And so it's still a small sample size, but for the Masters, the NFL draft, and the beginning of the NBA finals, it was down significantly more year over year than in general. And that would scare me if I'm ESPN.
And they should be scared. I mean, it's a show that hasn't found its footing yet. You know, I'm perfectly willing to say to everybody out there, you know, to all of you, is give it a chance. You know what I mean? You can't just judge a new show in a couple of months. But again, they might be just swimming against the tide here. SportsCenter itself is down as a franchise. You know, ESPN freaked out when Jimmy Horowitz said that a year ago, but it's true. They've lost a third of their audience. And, you know, maybe they're trying to flog a dead horse here. At the same time, I think Greeny's show is not going to be SportsCenter. I think, you know, as you described it, it's going to be more of a Good Morning America for sports. And I think that type of show is gaining traction right now. You know, NFL Network's got a good little morning show there with Good Morning NFL, where, you know, you've got that, you know, three or four person team sitting around kibitzing, you know, coming into your kitchen, you know, like friends, like a Today Show. That seems to be the way things are going.
You mentioned The Jump earlier. Now, The Jump, they expanded it so it's on all year, even in the off season. Last year, it wasn't on during the summer. If you look at the ratings every day, the general shows like Sports Nation and then all of the ride home shows, Highly Questionable, Around the Horn, PTI, those outdraw NFL Live and The Jump every day. But my understanding is there might be some language in ESPN's TV contracts with the leagues that they're going to have that sports-specific programming on daily. Have you heard that in your reporting?
I have not heard that, but that makes a lot of sense. I mean, ESPN, the greatest strength that they have is their live rights. They have relationships with these leagues. So it makes complete sense for them to have shoulder programming, especially around the two most talked about leagues, which are the NFL and the NBA. What I found really interesting, kind of head scratching, about this last round of the layoffs was how they seem to have cut way back on their baseball studio shows. You know what I mean? When we were growing up, you know, Baseball Tonight and those kinds of shows were the gold standards, and they seem to have been just put on the back burner in favor of just taking programming from MLB Network.
Yeah, the thing is, though, if you're looking at metrics, it's tough for me to gauge how Baseball Tonight was doing on TV, but I know that if we publish a baseball post or a hockey post and it's not like a serious fight or bodily injury, we're not getting any traction from analyzing the sport.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the new model for sports TV, sports radio, and frankly, sports online, is the NFL and NBA. They drive the traffic, the NFL because it's the most popular sport, and the NBA because it has the most fascinating individual athletes who we get to know so personally. I mean, LeBron and Steph and and Draymond, we feel like we know these people. We could see their facial expressions. Baseball has had a tough time getting against that. I think, you know, now that you've got some young stars coming up, particularly in New York, like Aaron Judge, you know, who are fascinating, they'll get to have some of that juice. I mean, the problem with baseball is, you know, even their stars like Trout and Judge, they're kind of, I hate to say this, dull. You know what I mean? They don't say a lot that's interesting. They're kind of, you know, good guys, but they're very low key. You know, they're not Draymond Green, or they're not LeBron James saying interesting stuff, or Tom Brady. So it's a little bit of a challenge for baseball, but I'm actually pretty upbeat on baseball. I mean, after last October, you know, the Cubs series was amazing. I think Fox really found something with their pregame show with A-Rod and Pete Rose. I'm pretty upbeat on baseball.
I'm upbeat on baseball as well, because when you cobble together all its regional strength, my opinion is that baseball is a more popular sport nationally than the NBA, but people want national NBA coverage. And with baseball, they really only care about their own team.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I think it was smart to, you know, have the Jump. I mean, I think they're thinking of the Jump as not just a studio show, but one of those sort of quality shows like a PTI, where, you know, you can get, you know, real news information, plus some real analysis from current and former players. So I think, you know, ESPN is doing a lot of smart things. I mean, Shell has a great reputation as a smart guy who kind of sees things from 30,000 feet. He doesn't, he's not wedded to the past like some of the people at ESPN, you know, who, you know, cut their teeth on SportsCenter. He's a guy who looks at the future, what's working now, and what's going to work 10 years from now. So I think this is a really good move for them.
Well, Shaw's big success was 30 for 30, which he co-created with Bill Simmons. As far as his studio initiatives, I think we have to wait and see to judge the content, because there hasn't been anybody other than Eric Rydholm or Jamie Horowitz who has made a successful sports studio show at ESPN since the turn of the century.
Right. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I mean, the jury is out. You know, obviously Jamie has given them a run for their money at FS1. Obviously, you know, he's going to be a tough competitor. But the thing about Jamie and Shell is they're very close friends. And that's actually a column I'm going to be writing today. You know, these guys are really close. They work together at ESPN. They vacation with each other. They've attended each other's weddings. So it's really a small world in that these two close friends and former colleagues are now really going to be the czars of content for ESPN and FS1.
What do you think Bill Simmons's next TV move is? Could you see him returning to ESPN in a capacity where, like, maybe he appears on The Jump and Countdown? Or do you think that ship has sailed for much further than the near term?
I think the ship has sailed for the near term. You know what I mean? I think Simmons right now should totally be in total retrench mode. You know, the HBO thing was a disaster. You know, it's a tin can that's going to be hung around his neck for the rest of his career. So, I mean, he has to make sure that if he's going to go back to TV, he's going to be a success. Now, how does Bill Simmons be a success? Well, I think he's proven that he can't carry a show on his own. So if he is going to go back, I could see him doing an NBA TV, sort of an ESPN NBA countdown show, where he's on there as part of a panel with three or four real talented TV pros. That would enable him to shine. But as far as doing a new solo show like HBO, where, you know what I mean, he basically does an opening monologue and then a long podcast interview, that ship has sailed.
Well, yeah, I was talking about being a panelist on, like, The Jump or Countdown. I have a bet.
I don't see him doing anything ESPN. I think that – I'm sorry, go ahead.
I have a bet with a prominent person in sports media that Simmons will appear on NBA Countdown at least once during the 2017-2018 NBA season.
you know, that's a bet I might be willing to take. I mean, I think that the feelings are still pretty raw between Simmons and ESPN, and that comes from Skipper on down. You know, I think Skipper on down, you know, really have it out for him. They don't like the way he handled themselves. You know, they don't like the way he left the company, and they certainly don't like the way he keeps bashing ESPN in his new position. So I don't see that. I mean, you know, could happen. I mean, Olbermann came back to ESPN, and supposedly he didn't only burn his bridges, he napalmed them. So, I mean, if Olbermann can come back to ESPN, I guess Simmons can come back. But I don't see it happening the next year.
So talking FS1, they have this Nick Wright, Chris Carter show. I call Nick Wright Nick Wrong because his predictions generally don't pan out, especially with regard to Durant and the Warriors. But that show, what do you think is the benchmark for success for that show this fall? Do you think if it gets in, if it breaks 50,000 viewers a day on average for the fall, is that considered a success or a failure?
I think that would be a success. I mean, what you really got to remember about this show is, yeah, I mean, would FS1 love to have, you know, its first ever morning national morning show become a hit? Sure. But the big strategy here is Skip. It's all about Skip at FS1. This show is designed to create a lead-in for Skip show, Undisputed. I mean, Undisputed starts right now at 9:30. There's nothing in front of it. It's just reruns and game highlights and European soccer and, I don't know, infomercials. I mean, that whole time slot is just a black hole. So if this show can get people to tune in even a little earlier to create a solid lead-in for Skip show, Undisputed, that's what they will view as success. If the show takes off, let's say, you know, people love Nick Wrong and Chris Carter, and, you know what I mean, the show becomes a big hit, God, I mean, you know, they would be doing handstands. But the main idea now is create a lead-in.
Do you have any idea what they're going to do in that afternoon gap in between the Herd and Speak for Yourself?
That's kind of a tough time slot because it gets preempted a lot. So whoever gets that show, you know what I mean, is going to get preempted by live sports. You know, could Katie Nolan slip in there? You know, we all want to know what Katie Nolan is going to be doing. Right now she's not doing anything. She, you know, her show is on hiatus, and FS1 tends to tackle one show at a time. And right now their focus is on Chris Carter and Nick Wright. Could they even put a highlight show there? Given Jamie's aversion to news and highlights, I kind of doubt it. But, you know, the idea and the strategy there is the same. They want to create a lead-in to Speak for Yourself. They want Speak for Yourself with Colin Cowherd and Jason Whitlock to be the main course, and then whatever that show is to be the appetizer.
Now, obviously, my boss, Jason McIntyre, appears on that show, so I'm rooting for it to succeed. And anything I say about it should be viewed under that lens. Do you see Colin sticking with that show for the long haul?
I do. I think Colin likes having two shows. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about his approach at FS1 is exactly the same thing he did with Jamie at ESPN. He had his Herd, you know, which is his bread and butter. Let's face it, that's the show he's built and nurtured over 20 years. And then he gets to go on in the afternoon and kind of, you know, joke around and have fun and repeat some talking points. And boom, he's got a second show. I mean, the guy is one of the hardest workers I've ever seen, Colin Cowherd. I don't know him personally, but, you know, the fact that he's able to handle two shows like that is pretty amazing. There's not many people who can do it. I think he does stick with Speak for Yourself. And, you know, I kind of like the show. I think it's more of a discussion show. I don't think it's an embrace debate show. I think they go deep into some topics, which I really like. You know, like a lot of shows, it's still got to find its footing. You know, these shows have only been on the air for a couple of months. But, yeah, I do see Colin sticking with it.
Back to ESPN. I believe that the Bomani and Pablo show is going to succeed because I think that highly questionable, their ratings went up when Bomani joined the show. The Eric Rydom is bad at 1,000 creating new shows, both at ESPN and then with Desus and Miro at Viceland, which is really an enjoyable and fun thing to watch. It's a little bit of a jarring transition to go from First Take to go to what that show is going to be. And we don't really have a sense of what that show is going to be because they haven't really appeared that much on television together. They've been on Around the Horn together, but we haven't really seen how their chemistry will work going one-on-one. Nevertheless, I think they're going to figure it out, and that show will be viewed successfully in terms of viewership and how some of the conversations sprout digitally from that show. What's your opinion?
I like you, I'm optimistic about that show. I know Fox tried to hire Bomani Jones not once but twice. And I know Bomani Jones has paid his dues at ESPN. I mean, when he started there, he was basically a writer and he was almost an afterthought. And they now, you know, he's
for a
one
while,
of their
back.
Yeah, for a while. And, you know, now he's a big no. To me, the X in the equation is Pablo. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah, I've seen him on Around the Horn. But can he carry his own show? I don't know. You know, I know they're really high on him at ESPN. I hear they're paying him a fortune. So they're investing in this guy for the long term. I mean, it's not like they're taking a flyer on him. They believe in Pablo Torre. And they believe in Bomani Jones. I mean, the other thing, too, is, and, you know, you, me, and everybody else has covered this. You know, ESPN now finds itself in the crosshairs of conservatives who think they have a liberal bias, they're left wing, and all the rest of it. And, you know, Bomani and Pablo were, you know, make no bones about both being progressive. So I'm wondering how much they're going to tackle political and cultural issues on that show, or if ESPN has been so stung by this charge that they're going to tell them to lay off. It'd be interesting.
I don't think that they are stung by the charge, but it hasn't really adjusted their overarching strategy. They'll do little things like putting Hank Williams Jr. back on Monday Night Football is cosmetic. It doesn't really mean anything. It's like a guy with a beard singing for 90 seconds once a week for 17 days a year. I know Monday Night Football is their biggest property, but it doesn't like shape how discussions happen on that network. And Connor, Clay Travis put out a piece today. Connor is pretty left-leaning himself, and they promoted Will Cain, but they promoted opinionists who are on the left probably in like a 7 or 8 to 1 ratio. Now, that being said, I think that their football studio coverage skews conservative, and people don't bring this up enough. When you have like Bill Polian or Teddy Bruschi or Lee Corso or Kirk Herbstreit on TV, these are not left-leaning iconoclasts. These are people who are more conservative, and that's the way that sport gets covered when it's just a football studio show, and people don't really bring that up.
Yeah, I agree with you on both points. I think the changes were cosmetic. I mean, Hank Williams, as I said to on another radio interview, was basically, you know, red meat for the red states. You know, it means absolutely nothing in the long term. You know, you have one guy, like you said, coming on, singing a song, the same song for 16 weeks. You know, Will Cain, every time they talk about, you know, how ESPN is balanced, somebody throws out Will Cain. Well, Will Cain, you know what I mean, doesn't have a show. You know, so you can't balance him, you know, between... You can't balance him with the 8 or 9 to 1 ratio. I mean, and also Will Cain is one of those conservatives that liberals love to have. He's kind of like a George Will conservative, but I don't really see him, you know, pounding the table and screaming on behalf of Donald Trump. So I agree with you that the changes they're making are cosmetic. I don't think, you know, there's some liberal secret cabal at ESPN. I think it's just a sort of a natural progression of the media and of that company. You know, like Bob Lay said, it's in the water up there.
My old colleague Ty Duffy, writing for Awful Announcing, made the point that it could be conceivably a good business strategy to skew liberal and try to get the younger, more progressive people who are all over the map into the ESPN tent. Well, I guess we'll have to see about that. I don't know that I necessarily agree, but this is what they're doing. And so it's just they're going to be the biggest sports media entity for at least the next 5 or 10 years, and we'll have to see how it works.
Yeah, I read Ty's story. I thought it was a very interesting theory. I mean, but the counter theory is the one that Jason Whitlock would say. I think he makes a good point that sports is conservative. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was covering the Colin Kaepernick thing, I have never seen such a visceral, furious reaction among sports fans. You know what I mean? They were taking to Twitter. You know what I mean? They would email me every time I did a story. I'd get 100 emails. You know, I will never watch the NFL again. You know what I mean? This is an insult to the flag. This is an insult to America. How dare they do? I mean, so there's a lot of sport fans out there who are conservative. And if they feel that ESPN, like Ty says, is only going to cater, you know, to this kind of urban left-wing audience, then that's a problem. I mean, TV networks are in the business of reaching all viewers or trying to reach all viewers, not 50% of the country. They want to, you know, just target 50% of the country. To me, that's a big risk.
Well, it's a risk that's paid off in reverse for Fox News. As far as the Kaepernick thing, I know you wrote about like that causing a boycott of the NFL. I think you and I philosophically disagree about whether that had one iota of impact on NFL viewership. My opinion is that it did not. That's kind of a non sequitur, though. Is there anything in regards to ESPN or FS1 or general sports media that we didn't discuss that you think is interesting going on right now?
Well, you know, I think that Turner is an interesting company to watch. I think Turner's got a lot of money and a lot of talent, and they're going to have a lot of opportunity. You know, is ESPN going to retrench in the next couple of years? Are they going to be less aggressive on going after rights? You know, Turner could be the X factor in the equation. I could definitely see Turner taking another run at the NFL. I mean, remember the days when they used to split the Sunday night package with ESPN? I mean, you're telling me Turner wouldn't kill to have Sunday Night Football back from NBC? So I think they're a company that I think is going to make a lot of moves. They got the money, they got the talent, and they might have the opportunity as ESPN and FS1 spend their time beating each other up.
Yeah, the Turner's parent company, Time Warner, is in all likelihood getting acquired by AT&T. So they're going to be a massive conglomerate, and we'll see how they want to spend on content. The next NFL deals come up in like 3 or 4 years. And well, the Thursday nights are up after this season. So that'll be Turner's first shot to take a crack at some of these rights. It'll be interesting to see if the next time the package comes up, if the NFL continues to split the AFC and NFC with Fox and CBS, because right now Fox gets far better end of that equation between the Cowboys being the far and away the biggest team. The Packers are very interesting, even though they're not in a big market. And then they've got big market teams like the Giants, the Eagles, Washington, the 49ers. Like the Raiders are moving out of the Bay Area to Las Vegas. The TV markets are really slanted towards the NFC, and I wonder if they might consider a new way of divvying up the package.
Boy, that would be a move. You know, that would be a move that would really send the business up in smoke, because, you know, the way they divide up the packages is so accepted, you know, going back for decades. The other thing I wonder about is, you know, are these technology companies ever going to get off their ass and actually make a bid for live sports rights? I mean, when you look at the market capitalizations of some of these companies, you know, they could easily outbid, you know, TV networks. You know, but the problem is, you know what I mean? They always want this stuff for free. They don't want to pay for it. But if, you know, the Googles and the YouTubes and the Facebooks and all these companies ever start, you know, bidding for sports rights, then I'd say watch out, TV networks.
The biggest audience, though, can still be found on NBC, CBS, ABC, or Fox. And I could see those internet companies maybe disrupting like cable networks like ESPN of the world. But right. I have a hard time thinking that in the next 15 or 20 years, the NFL isn't going to prefer to have its most prominent packages on the old school broadcast networks.
Right. Yeah, the NFL has always prided itself on that. That, you know, we bring it to you on free broadcast TV. But look, you know, the world has changed. Who expected Netflix 10 years ago? You know, who expected anything that we were seeing? So, I mean, the world is changing. You know, the NBA showed you could move your product to cable and be fine and completely move off broadcast TV, with the exception of ABC, of course, doing the finals. So, I mean, the precedent has been set.
Thank you, Mike. Really appreciate your time. This is, again, Michael McCarthy, sports media reporter for Sporting News, and he teaches sports media at Rutgers. Thank you again, Michael. We'll hopefully talk with you again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Familiar touch turns strange.